bit. Welcome to a Joycast from Joy 94.9. Visit joy.org.au to find out more about our Joycasts.
Here's another Saturday Magazine podcast brought to you by Joy sponsor, Virgin Australia. Visit virginaustralia.com.
Across Melbourne on Joy 94.9 and streaming online at joy.org.au, you're listening to Saturday Magazine, every Saturday, 10 till 12.
Jazz Dawson. Jazz Dawson's the Secretary and Director of the LGBTIQ Refugee Rights Kaleidoscope Human Rights Foundation. Is that right, Jazz?
Almost. Also, I feel very blessed to be the first live guest in a while. So I'm the Secretary and Director of Kaleidoscope Human Rights Foundation.
Right.
And within the organisation, my main focus is on LGBTIQ refugee rights
right.
in Australia.
So who is Kaleidoscope? Tell us who Kaleidoscope
is. So Kaleidoscope is a human rights organisation that was founded about 3 years ago. A lot of people might be familiar with Kaleidoscope Trust, which is in the UK. So we're a sister organisation of sorts. And our focus is on promoting and advancing LGBTI rights in the Asia Pacific region. So we do a lot of shadow reporting if a country comes up before a UN reporting body. But we also run human rights training programs. And just like our recent forum, the Pacific Youth Forum. And we also do advocating and awareness raising about LGBTI refugee issues in Australia.
So you're an independent organisation with
yes.
your own board and your own income?
Yes, we
are. And where do you get your income from, as a matter of interest?
Well, we don't really have an income. We're
right.
all volunteers.
Right, I see.
You can go and donate if you feel inclined.
Okay, that's an advertorial.
Yeah.
Are we allowed to do that?
But they're not for profit, so
we're
I think it's okay.
Yeah, we're not for profit. But we also, with our two human rights training programs we've done so far this year, we've partnered with the US Embassy in Canberra. So they have a real focus on LGBTI rights in the Pacific region. So they're a great partner for us to run our programs.
So can you let us know what some of the, I guess, top issues are for LGBTI asylum seekers and refugees in the region?
Mm-hmm. Well, in the region, it's interesting. We don't actually have a lot of refugees coming from the region into Australia, but that doesn't mean that they're not there. There are hubs like Hong Kong, also in Thailand on the border with Burma, and obviously coming down through Malaysia and Indonesia. Pretty much the main issues that people face when they're on their way to seeking asylum somewhere is safety. I mean, LGBTI people are more likely to face harm in most environments, particularly tense ones where people are fleeing conflict. But in pretty much any detention or camp environment, LGBTI people are 2 to 3 times more likely to suffer physical and sexual assault. So it's not a safe space. Particularly, a lot of LGBTI people will be traveling alone and they won't have their family support that other asylum seekers might have.
Can you give us a sense of the numbers? How many people are we talking about?
Well, that's a really tricky question. I think it's always tricky questions when we're talking about numbers. I know that a couple of years ago, ORIM, which is Organisation for Refugees and Migration, it's a US-based LGBTI immigration organisation, they hazard a guess that there's about 250,000. It would be nice if there were only 250,000 LGBTI asylum seekers across the world. And of those claims, only about 2,500 are accepted. I don't know about those numbers. It's very tricky when you start looking at whether someone is queer, but whether that's the basis of their claim.
Yes.
Often people will be seeking asylum and they will claim maybe religious grounds or political grounds and not actually reveal their sexual orientation or gender identity. So it's really hard to know. And a lot of the time people will assist a refugee and maybe 3 years later find out that they were gay or they were trans.
And tell me, do you have any insights into what's happening out at Nauru Island at the moment?
Not great things. I mean, I think both for
There was that very interesting documentary on Four Corners earlier this week. But is there a queer overlay that you can share with us?
Yeah. Well, we know that there is at least one gay couple in Nauru. They've been released into community, but actually they're sponsored and have legal support from the Human Rights Law Centre, who do fantastic work in this area. But we know that they've faced harm, they've had threats, they've actually been physically assaulted out in the community on Nauru, which is a tiny place. And only up until February, they still criminalize same-sex acts between men. So it is only very, very recently that Nauru has decriminalized. So that's a good indication for the fact that it's not exactly the safest space for queer asylum seekers or refugees. Yeah.
So because this debate has just sort of been reignited in regard to the Manus Island offshore detention centre, because asylum seekers in that particular detention centre eventually resettled in Papua New Guinea, where Manus Island is. And the head of Immigration and Border Security kicked up a bit of a controversy earlier this week when Michael Pizzullo, when he said that he was questioned by Louise Pratt, I think, who said, well, what happens to these queer-identifying asylum seekers when they're resettled onto Papua New Guinea, where it's criminal to be homosexual, LGBTI people face a lot of violence and discrimination. What is Australia's responsibility? And he said, it's not ours. Once they're out of the detention centre, essentially we don't give a stuff. It's not our problem. And PNG can just resettle them to a third country if they want. What sort of responsibility does Australia have in that sense?
Well, I think this is the big disagreement between the Australian government and pretty much everyone else.
Something a bit different.
Yeah, exactly. They like to interpret the Refugee Convention in a very new 2016 way. But they do have a legal responsibility under international law. And I know that the head of immigration said that it doesn't constitute refoulement, which is the kind of fundamental number one international legal principle, which is to not send someone to harm or persecution. And we knowingly do that. Those refugees and asylum seekers are there by a memorandum of understanding between our governments. So it's an agreement between two governments. And the Australian government also knows and did know that same-sex acts are criminalised. And previously, refugees and asylum seekers in detention have been told that if they're caught, having same-sex activity, they'll be handed to the local police. So we knowingly are sending people to persecution. In other jurisdictions, like in the UK and Canada, the mere existence of laws that criminalise same-sex acts has been found to constitute persecution. So that's not necessarily say that that's what would happen in Australian law or that a judge would find that. But in other jurisdictions, that environment itself, without actually being enacted, would constitute persecution. So it's a tricky argument. But I think most people think the government's on the wrong side of this one.
Well, absolutely. And I think whether they can sort of hide behind the law and their interpretation of law, I guess a sort of at a basic moral principle, it's a pretty awful thing to send someone into known harm, regardless if they want to hide behind the law or not. And I think, you know, it's an abdication of responsibility on behalf of the government.
And I mean, we really don't talk often in Australia about the actual procedural duties that we have. It's not only whether they'll be found in the end to be refugees. Under international law, we have responsibilities along the way as well. And we're not meeting those responsibilities. We have the responsibility to make sure they're not arbitrarily detained, that they have a timeline that's not indefinite, that they are safe and, you know, that all of
and
their
rights...
And
supported and actually supported. Do have appropriate care.
Exactly. I mean, I don't know for sure, but I would hazard a guess that absolutely no staff in these detention centres have had LGBTI competency training.
Yes, I suspect.
I mean, I can't say
any
that
competency
for sure.
training at all from the reports that we get coming out of these centres, let's be fair.
Exactly.
And what about mental health? I mean, it's been a pretty topical issue. So what about the sort of mental health support that's available to people in these places?
In Nauru?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't think there's much, really. I think it's just maintenance. In my mind, it's a bit bleak, but it sounds like they're just trying to keep them alive.
So dishing out the pills and leaving it at that.
Mm-hmm, exactly. I mean, I was talking last night at the Sandringham Uniting Church Social Justice Group.
There you go.
Good job.
Yeah, shout out to Nana Vera. She had me come and talk to her church about LGBTI issues in the region, asylum seekers. They're very progressive down there.
Sandringham.
And someone was saying that they know someone who was a teacher on Nauru, and when they first went there, the kids were bright, they'd just arrived, they had a hope and they were still learning. And they went back 3 years later and they were almost vegetative. Oh, I mean, yeah.
And that's children. We've got a responsibility to protect children at all costs. So particularly in regards to LGBTI issues, asylum seekers and refugees, what can we do as the general public to protect our brothers and sisters in the community?
Mm-hmm. A lot. There's not much happening. And we're kind of, Kaleidoscope's working with CoHealth and the fabulous Style Lady to start bringing together communities to talk about what service delivery gaps there are for LGBTI asylum seekers, but particularly health services, cultural services, LGBTI organisations, they all need cultural competency training, whether it's queer services, understanding the specific needs that someone has if they've fled persecution.
So, but Jazz, what can we do? I mean, what can we as ordinary punters on the street do?
Mm-hmm. Well,
we all have a voice. We all have. So what can we do? Give us some tips.
Number one, I would say start pushing for proper training in our immigration services.
Yep.
Call up your local member and say, hey, have you asked whether people who are actually processing asylum seekers have had LGBTI training? Hey, have you heard about how, our decision makers are saying, well, just because you have sex with men doesn't mean you're gay. I'm not going to let you into the country. And also, are you donating to, your LGBTI organisations that are making sure that their services are, available for refugees and asylum seekers?
What are some of those organisations we can donate to?
So CoHealth is really brilliant and they run out
of... That's a community health service.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Also, Drummond Street Services are doing a lot of work to make sure that their services are refugee specific. You can donate to Kaleidoscope,
of course,
if you like. also, the Asylum Seeker Resource Centre are really starting to pick up this ball. They've got a lot of claims of particularly people coming from Malaysia, so they're looking to establish support groups.
Thanks for listening to a Joycast from Joy 94.9.